I was just going to find something to read and somehow try to connect it to... I've been quoting this verse a lot lately. It's a wonderful verse. I quoted it last night. There must be a commentary to it. It's from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, I think I'll quote it, I'll read it, and with the translation. And,
perfect.
11th canto, 2nd chapter, 12th verse. Shuto nupatito dhyata adrito manumudita sadhya unati sad dharmo deva vishva durho bihi. Translation. Pure devotional service rendered to the Supreme Lord is spiritually so potent that simply by hearing about such transcendental service, by chanting its glories in response, by meditating on it, by respectfully and faithfully accepting it, or by praising the devotional service of others, even persons who hate the demigods and all other living beings can immediately be purified. Report. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur has commented that the word Saddhamma refers to Bhagavad Dharma. This is also confirmed by Sridhar Swami. Bhagavad Dharma is spiritually so powerful that even those who by worldly standards are implicated in various ways in sinful behavior can easily be purified by adopting any of the processes mentioned in this verse. In the practice of ordinary piety, one worships God with the expectation of receiving something in return for one's service. Similarly, the impersonalist aspires for his own liberation, wishfully thinking that he will become equal to God. In Bhagavad Dharma, however, there is no such impurity. Bhagavad Dharma is devotional service to the Lord, in which the only objective is the satisfaction of the Lord. If one rejects this process and instead wants to hear about, teach, or meditate upon another process, the chance for immediate purification is lost. Neither ordinary materialistic yoga processes meant for achieving mystic powers nor impersonal processes based on speculation have the power to purify immediately those who have fallen into sinful behavior. Sad Dharma, or Bhagavad Dharma, pure devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is unique in that even the most fallen souls can immediately rise to the highest perfectional stage by surrendering at the lotus feet of Krishna or his pure devotee. This was vividly demonstrated in the preaching work of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially in the case of the sinful brothers, Jagai and Madhai. End of proof. This verse came to mind. Hearing about Srila Prabhupada and his determination to come for Guru Dharanga Prabhu. And to come for everyone else that Guru Granth Sahib mentioned, which basically was everyone. I reflected on, of course, so many verses. Kirata Gauranga Govinda Bukasha, we can think of so many verses which will illustrate Srila Prabhupada's purpose for coming to purify us by giving us Krishna. And of course, because Krishna is pavitram, he is completely pure, and his activities are all completely transcendental. His personality is completely transcendental, and everything connected to him becomes immediately purified by contact with him. Not only with him, but with him as he has manifested himself in his name, Kali Kali Namarupa, Krishna Avatar Namahoite Hoisala Jagadhistara. That in the age of Kali, Krishna has incarnated in the form of his holy name, and then he associates with Krishna. This is good, with Krishna's name, this is as good as associating with Krishna directly, certainly that he becomes delivered. So Krishna is pure, his name is pure. Nam Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purnashriva Nitya Tobhidabhad Nama Namino. But we oftentimes also quote this verse explaining how Krishna's name is completely transcendental, bestows all spiritual benedictions, it is always eternal and liberated, is never material in any way. And because Krishna and his name are no different, Prabhupada would quote many verses invoking Krishna, invoking Krishna's presence by his pure purpose, a transcendental purpose, to glorify the activities of the Lord in relationship with his unworldly devotees. And everything Prabhupada delivered was completely pure. And therefore, as Krishna says, Naham Tishtami Vaikunte Yoginam Tideyeshuva Tatra Tishtami Narada Yatra Ganati Madhvata. He tells Narayan Muni that I am not in the Vaikuntha planets, nor will you find me in the hearts of yogis. But wherever my devotees are chanting my glories, that's where I am. That's where I go. Imagine Krishna saying, I'm not in the Vaikuntha planets. It almost sounds like, wait a minute, I've read so many different references of Krishna being in the Vaikuntha planets. But to speak of the fact that Krishna is in the hearts of yogis, so how is it he's saying he's not there? Essentially, the meaning of this verse is that pure devotional service rendered by his pure devotees who glorify pure devotional service, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Achatasman Manushi Shukashtyane Priya Kirtama, that there is no servant in this world who is more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be anyone who is more dear. What he's saying is that this is a more attractive place for him to be. This is a more attractive place for him to go, where his pure devotees are narrating his transcendental pastimes, not only for their own purification and for their own relishment, but by relishing and narrating and distributing, Krishna becomes so pleased because such devotees are giving so many other living beings the opportunity to come in contact with Krishna. And that's very attractive to Krishna. So therefore he's saying, well, more attractive than Vaikuntha, more attractive than the hearts of yogis is where my pure devotees are narrating my transcendental pastimes. I'd like to go there. And of course, Chaitanya Charitamrita, even it is described by Kaviraj Goswami, or the unalloyed devotional service rendered by those who engage in spontaneous devotional service, is even more attractive. And he says that, for instance, when the gopis are chastising him, then Krishna says, even my mind is completely taken away from the reverential hymns of the Vedas. My mind is willing to take anybody who offers any reverential prayers from the Vedas. They may capture their attention by their reverential prayers, but when the gopis chastising me out of love, I can't help it. I go there. I go there. Krishna has his preferences. And therefore, in so many ways, the pure devotee is somebody who makes Krishna accessible to others. Kaviraj Goswami in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, he glorifies Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the ocean of transcendental mercy, because he explains that although the subject matter of bhakti is very difficult to understand, nonetheless, Lord Chaitanya has made it so easily accessible in the age of Kali. Again, evidence is there in this verse of what Srila Prabhupada did. That Prabhupada made bhakti accessible because he understood that that pure devotional service rendered to the Supreme Lord is so potent that simply by hearing about such transcendental service, or by hearing it, by chanting about it, chanting its glories in response. Prabhupada, I remember one time, I think it was a conversation in Columbus, Ohio. He was in the 1960s, he was speaking with a group of devotees. He was talking about Shravanam Kirtanam. And he was explaining that how powerful it is that when one is heard, then when one hears the message of Krishna consciousness, then the best way to remember is to repeat what one has heard. Because if you hear it, and then you repeat, just tell someone else what you heard, then it's sort of like, Prabhupada was explaining, then this is how the best way to capture Krishna in your mind, to remember him, is to repeat that which you've heard. Not like a parrot, as Guru Varanagupta was saying, although simply if we repeat, like, if we can't say it or anything about Krishna with complete realization, then even if we repeat like a parrot, that's certainly better than to give somebody mental speculation. Certainly better than to give somebody mundane topics, mundane subject matter, which has no purifying effect upon the audience. No real tangible benefit for the audience. This verse actually helps us to understand how important it is for us to hear about the activities of the Lord and his devotees and the activities of his pure devotees. To hear the activities of his pure devotees, as Prabhupada said, is as good as hearing about Krishna. Because a pure devotee, whatever he does, is always connected to Krishna. There's no question of him doing anything independent from Krishna's will. And everything he does is very pleasing to the Lord. And the Lord always emphasizes the point of sadhyatam amyogodhya samkirtana udhava, as explains that when a devotee engages in unalloyed devotional service, it brings me under his control. And pure devotional service, as described by Rupa Goswami, is the only method by which we can attract Krishna. Krishna cannot be attracted by anything else. not by Samkhya yoga, not by sacrifices or austerities, or none of these things can actually capture the Lord's attention. Or it comes to mind another verse which I oftentimes quote, because it's just, it's a powerful verse by Prahlad Maharaj, who he says, you can't please Krishna even if you become an expert Brahmin, or even if you become advanced in etiquette or vast learning, or even if you perform austerities, great sacrifices, accept vows, which are by chastity. None of these things can awaken Krishna's pleasure. The Lord is pleased only when one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. And without sincere devotional service, everything else that one does is simply a show. So Prahlad Maharaj, a five-year-old boy, who would only speak about pure devotional service, and who was always engaged in pure devotional service, he was so expert in purifying his classmates, bringing them into, drawing them in, attracting them to chant Krishna's name, and because his instructions and his behavior was connected to Krishna. And he's told his friends, in fact, he said, oh my friends, this verse I just quoted, he's actually saying, oh my friends, oh sons of demons, you can't please this supreme personality. He knew who he was talking to. And even if you become an expert Brahmin, Bhagavad-bhakti-hina sajati shastra chapastapa panasiva dehena mandalam lokarajanam. As Prabhupada would also quote this verse many times, that if a person who's if a person who's devoid of devotional service, even if he's expert at chanting all kinds of Vedic mantras, even if he's expert at performing all kinds of austerities, even if he's taking birth in a great family or nation, or even if he is knowledgeable in the scriptures, for him all of these things are like ornaments of a dead body, because he simply serves the concocted pleasures of the general populace without devotion, without devotional service. Everything else, Prahlad Maharaj says, that you do is simply a show, because Krishna is only attracted to pure devotion. Nothing else can attract him. You can scream out, demand his attention, offer him millions of dollars, do bribe him, try to bribe him, perform very severe austerities. Prahlad Maharaj says, even if he performs severe austerities, doesn't work. Because Krishna says, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer, give away, as well as austerities that you perform, should be doing for me. Someone may perform very severe austerities. Lord Brahma says, you perform all kinds of severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position, but your intelligence is still impure, because you'll fall down from that imagined superiority if you don't take shelter in Krishna's lotus feet. What is the value of all your austerities to achieve the highest position? You think you perform great severe austerities to become renounced, detached, to become detached and liberated, even liberated. But here, as we just read in the verse today, we just quoted in the commentary, that pure devotional service is our Bhagavad Dharma. There is no impurity. He said, ordinary materialistic yoga processes are meant for achieving mystic powers, nor impersonal processes based on speculation. Neither do they have the power to purify immediately those who have fallen into sinful behavior. So, not by karma, not by jnana, not by austerities, not by great sacrifices. None of these things actually can attract Krishna's attention. And therefore, our responsibility is that even though we may not be pure, the best way to become pure is to not compromise. Because by hearing about the activities of Krishna and his pure devotees, we become pure. Sometimes we think, we hear stories, we hear pastimes of the Supreme Lord with his devotees, like how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees in Srimad Bhagavatam. Or we hear how Lord Chaitanya, especially, how he reciprocates with his devotees in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat. And we hear such pastimes of how much the Lord is attracted to his devotees and how his devotees actually receive so much mercy from the Lord by their devotion. And we start thinking, well, you know, what has that got to do with me? Why do I want, you know, what benefit is there for me hearing about this story? You know? Like when Lord Chaitanya delivers Mukunda, when Mukunda, you know, was eager to know when the Lord would give his darshan to him, because all the devotees one by one were being called during the Mahaprakash Leela. And Mukunda was wondering, why isn't Lord Chaitanya calling me? And then he asked Srivas, can you ask Lord Chaitanya? There he is. He's calling every one of his devotees in the Mahaprakash Leela. And he's giving benedictions to them. What is he benedicting them with? Because all of these devotees appeared in this world before the Lord. Advaita Acharya, Haridas Thakur, Shivas, they all appeared before the Lord. And the Lord, during his Shataprahaya Bhava, was standing on the altar, because it was his ecstasy of 21 hours. He was standing on the altar and he was fulfilling the innermost desires of his devotees. And he was revealing to each and every one of them how even though he hadn't descended yet to this world, each and every one of his devotees was put in a situation where the Lord was forced to come to help them. And he revealed to each and every one. He said, to Haridas. He's called Haridas. One by one, he's calling the devotees with the bell. He says, Haridas, come before me. Haridas. Do you remember when you were taken to the marketplaces, 22 marketplaces, and were being beaten up? Lord Chaitanya hadn't descended yet. He was still wherever he was before descending. He said, do you remember when you were beaten to 22 marketplaces? Do you remember how they were beating you and you were feeling so much compassion for them that they wanted you to die? And then when you understood that they were in so much anxiety because you wouldn't die, because they were told by the Qazi that they to kill you, and then you realized that their anxiety was that unless you die, they would maybe be punished by the Qazi. And they said, oh, you want me to die? Okay, I'll die. Because you were feeling compassion for them. Do you know that compassion that you felt for them was so attracted to me, so much that you were feeling towards them, that I couldn't neglect you. Do you know why you didn't feel pain when you were being beaten by them? Do you know that it was because I was lying on your back and I was taking the blows one by one? And then Lord Chaitanya, while he was standing in the altar, he turned around and said, just see my back. You see the blows I accepted for you? Haridas Thakur was... He understood, because actually, in Gaura Leela, Lord Chaitanya didn't really disclose, he didn't reveal his divinity. He was actually taking the role of a devotee. They were accustomed to seeing this... First, this young Nimai is an arrogant Brahmin who is always, you know, engaged in logic and argument and engaged in in arguing with the devotees. And then after he manifested some devotional qualities after returning from Gaya and beating Ishwarapuri, he began manifesting some devotional qualities, but he was always manifesting the mood of a devotee and wanting to serve the devotees. And he had not yet even revealed his divinity to anybody yet. And even some of them were wondering, who is this person that's so attractive, that captivates my mind? I was so overwhelmed by his beauty, by his everything about him. There must be something about him. But they didn't know. They didn't know. Even at the Vaitracharya, when he was sitting and he was preaching to Vishwaroop, and young Nimai would come to get Vishwaroop to take him home. And at Vaitracharya, Nimai would come and enter into the place where he was speaking Bhagavatam. He'd look at Nimai and he'd stop speaking, stunned. What is it so attractive about this boy? I don't know what it is. But he didn't know. He didn't know it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's Chana Avatar. He came as the hidden incarnation. But he was so attractive. So he told Haridas Thakur that it was me. I came and I stood on your back. And I protected you. And then, of course, Haridas Thakur began offering prayers to the Lord. And then he called Gangadas. He said, Gangadas, do you remember? Do you remember that the Muslims were invading the village and you were running out of fear for your life with your wife and your family? And you were thinking, I have to take them away, I have to save them. And then you came to the banks of the river. And you were standing on the banks of the river and tears, you were praying, oh Krishna, please somehow, what can I do? Do you remember? Lord Chaitanya wasn't there. But he said, do you remember that a boatman came all of a sudden, appeared before you? Don't you remember a boatman came and said, please step into the boat, I will take you across the Ganga. Gangadas, do you know who that boatman was? I was that boatman. I came and I carried you across the Ganga. Gangadas, hearing this, overwhelmed with ecstasy. The Lord was satisfying it, you know, every one of his devotees, and then one by one, he called another devotee, called Kolavecha Shirdhar. Of course, Kolavecha Shridhar, the Lord actually had some engagement with Kolavecha in his youth. But then, as he was calling each and every one of these devotees, and the devotees were getting their benedictions from the Lord during his ecstasy, Mukunda was wondering, hey, what? Me? Why are you neglecting me? And he asked, you know, why is the Lord not calling? And he said to Srivas, can you ask the Lord? You know, I can't come before him unless he calls me. He's called each one of you, but he's not calling me. And then sort of Srivas said, oh, Mukunda, he's here. He sings so nicely for you. You relish his kirtans every time he's chanting. And he's wondering, when will you call him? When will you see him? And Lord Chaitanya said, Mukunda! Oh, that rascal. No. He goes and associates with impersonalists. And then, after associating with impersonalists, he comes here and he behaves like a devotee. He says, on one hand, it's like carrying a club in one hand to beat me, and the other hand, he carries a lotus flower. I can't accept such behavior like that. Because he was referring to a time when Mukunda used to go. It was sometime long before that. He was referring to that time. He said, no, I don't want to see him. And Mukunda was shocked. And he said, well, can you please ask him when will the Lord call me to him and allow me to see him again? And the Lord said, in 10 million births he will see me. birds. And Mahavishnu heard this, he was in ecstasy. And he began chanting, dancing. Just, I will see. And then, of course, as we know that Mukunda, in his ecstasy, he was became so absorbed because he was feeling that it's so wonderful that I will see the Lord again. He will allow me to come and see him. He didn't care that it was 10 million birds. What difference does it make? At least I'll see him again. And when Lord Chaitanya could see this great faith that Mukunda had in his words, I will see. Then Lord Chaitanya literally called this and said, tell Mukunda to come here. We hear stories like this. And then, of course, the devotee started calling Mukunda and said, Lord Chaitanya wants to see you. But he was so busy chanting and dancing, he couldn't even hear them. He had to go and pick them up and carry him and place him before the Lord. And then the Lord expressed, oh Mukunda, you have not committed any offenses. Whatever offenses you may have committed, immediately they've been, because of your faith in me, you've become completely, all your offenses have been nullified. And I give you the benediction that birth after birth you will come and you will sing for me wherever I go. And Mukunda began offering prayers to the Lord, such beautiful prayers. In this way, when we hear these, we think, well, this is Mukunda, this is Haridas, this is Advaitacharya, this is Ganga Das, these are all associates of the Lord. What has it got to do with me? The Lord's never going to call me and ask me to glorify him, to offer prayers to him, or to speak of reciprocate with me in this way and give me benedictions in the way that he does with his pure devotees, because I'm just not there. But actually, by hearing what this verse is saying, by hearing about these activities, simply by hearing, and faith, pure devotional service is spiritually so potent that simply by hearing about such a transcendental service, simply by glorifying these activities in response, simply by remembering it, simply by faithfully and respectfully accepting it, right? Yeah, it's not me, but it's real. And there's nothing more real than bhakti. This is reality. Everything else is just an illusion. It's temporary. Everything else is just, it's no connection to Krishna. And therefore, as Krishna tells Brahma, whatever you see of it has no connection to me. If you think it's something that's valuable, but if you don't see its connection to me, it's my maya. It's my illusory energy. If you don't see it connected to Krishna, you think, well, it's valuable. Well, why is it valuable if it's not connected to Krishna? Oh, because it's connected to me. We think that makes it valuable. Well, congratulations. You have something connected to you. And you can both go down together, degrade together. Both you and your attachments can degrade together because of your forgetfulness of Krishna. But a devotee is one who sees everything connected to Krishna. What could be more connected to Krishna than the narrations of his pastimes? There could be nothing more connected to Krishna than the transcendental narrations of pastimes, because he personally manifests himself in Srimad Bhagavatam. Or just as Prabhupada writes in his purport, sometimes when Narada Muni all of a sudden appears before Dhruva Maharaj, appears before Prahlad Maharaj while he was in the womb of his mother. Narada Muni always says this, because wherever Narada Muni goes, it's Narada Muni Bhajayavina Vadigadamana, he's always glorifying the Lord. So wherever he appears, he's always preaching pure devotional service. And Prabhupada explains in the commentary that Narada Muni has appeared to us in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. He appears. And wherever he appears, in that place, it's as good as the Lord. It's as good as associating with the Lord. And when one associates with the Lord, then what happens? The heart becomes purified. Nasta Prayushu Abhitishu Nityam Bhagavata Seviya Bhagavad Uttama Shloki Bhakti Bhavati Narishtaki. By regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, or as Prabhupada translated, by regular attendance of Srimad Bhagavatam classes. And serving the pure devotee, that all is troublesome to the heart is practically destroyed in loving devotional service. To the transcendental Lord becomes established as an irrevocable fact. And, of course, Shrimbhata Sukhata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, Shri Krishna, who is the super soul and heart of all living beings, and cleanses desire for material enjoyment within the heart of those persons, who develops the urge to hear about pure devotional service. So those who faithfully and respectfully accept such pure devotional service, or simply by describing the devotional service of others. I might not be able to be engaged in pure devotional service, but if I describe the devotional service by others, such as describing Srila Prabhupada's devotional service, such as describing the devotional service of so many other devotees who are purely motivated to please the Lord, what happens? Hearing, chanting, remembering, we become purified. It becomes relevant. It immediately becomes relevant. Even though we think, I'm not there, but I want to hear about it. Because what's the value of hearing about all these other topics that have no connection with Krishna? They can only temporarily satisfy my mind, my inquisitiveness. They can temporarily satisfy some physical or psychological need. They can temporarily satisfy some desire. But they can't fulfill the need of the heart. They can't fulfill the need of the hankering soul. And that's what Srila Prabhupada did. Prabhupada came to fill the most vital need that everyone. I mean, I oftentimes tell, when I listen to Prabhupada's 1966 lectures in New York on Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada was, there he was, 1966, to a group of hippies, drug addicts. Why did it do that? Such urgency. Not only but urgency, but every word was like a loving father. You know, like these were his children. He was just like a loving father, and he was just like a father always wants the best for his children. Prabhupada wanted the best for his fledgling group of disciples. They couldn't even be called disciples yet. Many of them. They were just. What were they? I don't know. Maybe they're better off, better at describing who they were than I am. I wasn't there.
Fortunately,
but Prabhupada was just like a loving father caring for his children, and he was just delivering the goods, talking about pure devotional service, talking about Lord Chaitanya, talking about Mother Jasoda, talking about the only way to attract the Lord is by unalloyed devotional service, how to please the Lord, giving up all mundane materialistic motivations and satisfying the Lord. And Prabhupada was making the topic relevant for his audience, because he was giving an opportunity to become purified. Recently, it's very interesting. Actually, it just brings to mind one quote I wanted to read. And, I don't know if I can find it. It's in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Anyways, I don't know where I'll find it. Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Deepa. But, essentially, I'll paraphrase. It was the story of Devananda Pandit. And Devananda Pandit, as most of us probably know, he was a speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. But he would speak from Srimad Bhagavatam, but he would never glorify devotional service. And he was a mental speculator. And he was much more interested in liberation and not interested in actually pleasing the Lord. And although he was a great scholar, and people would come and listen to his presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam, he would have many people in his classroom. The Lord, for many reasons, one of course is offense to Srivast Thakur, and this is another pastime actually, I don't want to digress, but it's not really a digression, is another pastime when Lord Chaitanya was during Shataprahaya Bhava. He called Srivas before him too, and he said, "Oh Srivas, do you remember?" Again, before the Lord had appeared. "Srivas, do you remember that when you were walking by the place of Devananda Pandit and he was speaking Srimad Bhagavatam? And because you heard Srimad Bhagavatam as it is, even though he wasn't speaking it as it is, and you came and you sat and you were hearing, seeing Krishna present in every syllable, hearing, seeing Krishna present in every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam. You sat in that place. And although Devananda Pandit was speaking and his students were there sitting and attentively listening, your heart was always so fixed in remembrance of me. You began to cry. Do you remember what happened, Srivas? The students, they considered to be a disturbance to their teacher who was speaking. And instead of respecting you for who you were, they picked you up, carried you out, and put you outside. And do you know that Devananda Pandit, he was sitting and speaking, and he didn't even stop them? Do you remember what happened? You found yourself standing outside, and then you went home. And then while you were home, you were sitting and reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And then while you were reading Srimad Bhagavatam, do you remember you felt so much ecstasy in your heart? Do you know why you felt so much ecstasy in your heart at that time, Srivas? You felt so much ecstasy because I appeared in your heart. I came there, right where you were." Of course, and then Srivas heard this, and Srivas also. One by one, the Lord was, as we said, revealing to each one of his devotees. So Devananda Pandit had done this. He didn't stop his disciples from carrying him out. He offended Srivas. But Chaitanya was really, really disturbed. So anyways, in one of the verses of that pastime, when Lord Chaitanya was chastising Devananda Pandit for what he had done to Srivas Thakur, what he had not done by stopping his students from carrying him out. In the commentary, one of the verses, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that this verse is being spoken to help us to understand that whenever Srimad Bhagavatam is being spoken, only pure devotional service to the Lord should be recited, should be glorified on every page of Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, sometimes we see that people, they say that devotional service should not be glorified. And he said, and instead they try to present Srimad Bhagavatam in a different light by speaking about other topics, such as culture, or if you get art, so many different things, external things. And he says, because pure devotional service is meant to be propagated throughout the world, that any person who speaks from Bhagavatam and doesn't properly glorify pure devotional service, he becomes touched with offense to the Lord because of his failure to glorify the Lord. So, I'm paraphrasing. I'm trying to capture the essence of what he was saying. But the essence is that Srimad Bhagavatam on every page is glorifying pure devotional service, and Srila Prabhupada made pure devotional service so easily accessible because he didn't compromise. He didn't present something else as a way to attract people to pure devotional service. From the beginning, middle, and end. Just like sometimes people read Bhagavad Gita and they say, well, it seems every page of Bhagavad Gita is karma yoga, but Prabhupada's talking about devotional service. It's this, Prabhupada's talking about devotional service every page. But Prabhupada understands the end. He understands what is the goal of all the Vedas. He doesn't compromise. He only speaks about pure devotional service. And by speaking about pure devotional service, he makes bhakti accessible. Not just by speaking, but also by his example. We spoke about this yesterday, for those of you who are here. It's not just the words. One can speak about devotional service, but what makes the topics so spiritually potent is when, as Srila Prabhupada did, not only speak and glorify devotional service, but he embodied it himself. And therefore, that's what makes bhakti accessible. And that's what Srila Prabhupada did. He glorified, and he told others, he glorified the pure devotional service because he understood it's so spiritually potent. It will purify anyone who hears it. Then what did he tell us to do?
Go out.
Go out. Tell others. Just go out and tell others. Didn't wait for us to become purified. He knew by going out and tell others we become purified. Why? Because we're repeating what we heard from him. And we're following what he's told us to do. Therefore we become fit to give that same message, as Guru Vrindavan was explaining in the beginning. That's how to become fit. We hear, we follow, we go out and tell others, and then what happens? Simply by glorifying pure devotional service in response. By meditating on it. It's a nice topic to meditate on. Something we'd all like to achieve someday. Look what happens to all those devotees who achieved it. They got the Lord. Krishna gave himself to them. Something nice to achieve. By respectfully accepting it. Yes, it exists. I don't have it, but I want it. Respectfully accepting it and worshiping it. Or by always looking for opportunities to glorify those who are doing some service with an aim to please the Lord. And glorifying, praising the service of others. Then even a person who hates the demigods and all living entities in the universe can immediately be purified. It's relevant for anyone who wishes to become purified. Therefore, we should be very careful to make sure that we utilize our time wisely. Prabhupada gave us everything in his books. He didn't compromise. He gave us pure emotional service on every page. And he reminded us on every page. No matter what book you open. Prabhupada even said, wherever you open Srimad Bhagavatam, it's like a sweet ball. Doesn't make any difference which side you lick it, it's always sweet. Wherever you open Srimad Bhagavatam, it's all pure devotional service. Just read it, repeat it, relish it, tell others about it, remember, find time every day. Find time every day to come in contact with Krishna. and pure devotional service. And any opportunity when one gets to sit in front of somebody else, don't become touched by the offense of knowing that pure devotional service is the real message that needs to be given. This, and he says, because there's such a, that's right, that was the other point he made in that prayer point. He says, because there's such scarcity of it in the material world. He said, therefore, one should not become touched by the offense of not glorifying pure devotional service to others whenever the opportunity arrives, because it is so scarce. And therefore, this is our method of following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada. This is what pleases him. This is what purifies us, because Prabhupada is very pleased to see our hearts become purified. And this is what glorifies Prabhupada. Because then everyone gets the opportunity to see what kind of a spiritual master Srila Prabhupada was, that he didn't compromise. He only wanted to give Krishna and nothing else. And this is our duty. It's our legacy. It's the legacy Prabhupada handed to his followers. It's what he's given to his followers. It's what he wanted to pass on to his followers and to keep intact. Not only now, just only how many years after his departure from this world? 1977 was what, 47 years ago? Not only 47 years, but... Huh? 30. Yeah, 30. That's right, 30. But for many generations to come, this will keep Prabhupada present. This is how to keep Prabhupada in the center. We don't need to change anything. We don't need to change. There's one, and I'll end with one also very... This I know I have here. It's a very powerful quote. It's from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But nonetheless, it's very powerful. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about... how to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. He says, after receiving initiation and instructions from a bona fide guru, a fortunate disciple should follow the path of the previous sadhus. Those who are proud neglect the previous mahajans and they create new paths. As a result, they soon proceed on their inauspicious path and ruin themselves. It is said in the Skanda Purana, Samrigya Shreya Samhetu Panta Santapa Vajita Anavapta Shramam Purve Yena Santapa Tashtive. One should strictly follow the easy path which the previous Mahajans have accepted. That path bestows great auspiciousness and is devoid of all misery. By discussing the path of the previous sadhus, one gets determination, courage, and satisfaction. When we discuss the path of devotional service exhibited by Sri Rupa, Sri Sanatan, Sri Raghunath, Sri Haridas Thakur, then we feel such happiness that it cannot be described. When the miscreant Mohammedans tortured Haridas Thakur, he said, Kanda, Kanda, Haideha Yaya, Yaya Yadi Pran, Tabu Ami Padane, Nachari Harinam, Esaba Jivani Krishna, Karaha Prasada, Mora Drohe, Nahu Esabara Aparada. Even my body is cut into pieces and I lose my life. I will never give up chanting the Lord's holy name. O Krishna, please be merciful upon these poor souls. Kindly excuse them for their offense of torturing me. End of quote. And then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, maintaining this type of determination and being compassionate to all living entities while always chanting the holy name of Krishna is the path of devotional service exhibited by the previous Mahajans. A path cannot be manufactured. Whatever path is there should be accepted by sadhus. Those who are proud and want fame, they try vigorously to discover new paths. Those who have good fortune from past lives give up pride and respect the established path. Those who are unfortunate promenade on a new path and thus cheat the world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is here explaining that we should try to manufacture a new path. It's already been given to us. Prabhupada has already given us the path. Firm determination, compassion for all living beings, and incessant chanting of the holy name of the Lord. That is the path established by our previous Mahajans. That is the path he taught us. And it's the path of pure devotional service. And if we simply maintain faith and deliver the message as he delivered it to us without compromise, we'll keep Prabhupada present in our movement. His movement will continue to grow, will continue to expand, because Prabhupada will be present. This is what it means. This is what we talked about in the last weekend at our festival in Boston. We discussed not only what Prabhupada did, but we had to look forward and say, now what are we going to do? Now 50 years have passed. What's going to happen in the next 50 years? Are we going to turn Prabhupada's mission into something different? Are we going to preserve Prabhupada's mood, his desire, and his uncompromising determination to deliver pure devotional service to everyone without discrimination and give everyone an opportunity to come in contact with Krishna? That is what Prabhupada has left behind for us. And it's only 37 years after his departure. We have to make sure that we set in stone what Prabhupada left for us to follow for future generations to come. This is some of the things that I've been reflecting on this past weekend and recently about what Srila Prabhupada has given to us and what we must, on his behalf, continue to distribute for the welfare of everyone else. I think I've spoken long enough, and maybe I should, if you have any questions you'd like to ask, maybe Guru Ranga Prabhu or myself, I'll be happy to answer them if I can. Yes.
Thank you for the class. I had written some couple of questions, but a new question came from this. So you were mentioning that the paths, there's a path which was out of the previous acharyas and the Mahajans.
I wasn't. I was about to note that over. I should be here.
And we're supposed to follow it. Now some people, they'll say, well, there's many paths. For example, we'll say, there's many paths, say, to go to a city or something like that. So then you would ask, so why choose that path?
Why choose what path? Which path? The many paths or this path?
The path of the Mahajans. Mm-hmm. No, the point is, yeah, they'll say there's many paths.
Many paths to where? It depends where you want to go.
To God's sake.
Well, where do you want to go? To God. But what does to God mean? Krishna says, I created many paths. You're talking about Pupajate, Tangsataiva Bajamiyahan. He says, all those surrender to me, or Lord the Kodi. Everyone follows my path in all respects. What is Krishna saying? He says, yeah, any path that you find ultimately is coming from me, but it doesn't mean it comes to him. He's given all the different paths. Elsewhere he says, if you want to go to the planets of the demigods and worship the planets of the demigods, you go there. If you want to go to the ghosts and spirits, you worship them, you go there. If you want to go here, Brahman, you perform these austerities, you can go there. But those who worship me, they come to me. Yes, all these paths are coming from Krishna, but it depends where you want to go.
Okay, so it really depends, where you're setting up your goal.
So that's the first question we have to ask them. Where do you want to go? We tell them where we want to go and why we've chosen this path. And we can point to others who achieved That destination is the result of following this path. So therefore, we give them the reason. Well, I want to serve Krishna. And that's the path I want. Because that's my constitutional position. My eternal identity is like Jivera Surupaya Krishna Nityadas. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. There's much more to life than just simply to become relieved from distress, which most people is a path which most people want. So I want to serve Krishna. And I look at these devotees and see how not how happy they are by serving Krishna, but how Krishna reciprocates with them. Because I hear about it all the time, and I talk about it, and I like to hear about it, because it gives me faith, and because it's real. So, therefore, I prefer this path, because I want to serve Krishna. What do you want? What do you want? And whatever they want.
Also, Krishna has his own recommendation. If Krishna's given all the paths, then wouldn't you want to be interested in what Krishna's recommendation is? He's given all the paths, and then what does he recommend? What does he suggest you do? That's what the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is. It says, give up everything, all dharma. Just surrender unto me. I will protect you. So that's the Lord's recommendation.
And then in the next verse, he tells what that surrender is. Man mana bhava man bhakta, madhyaji man namaskar. Always thinking.
See, sometimes people want the Bhagavad Gita without the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita.
The kingdom.
Prabhupada always commented, like Dr. Radhakrishnan, who was vice president of India in the 60s, he said, Krishna says, think of me, surrender to me. And in his purport, or interpretation rather, Dr. Radhakrishnan says, it is not to Krishna that we must surrender, but to the unborn within Krishna. But Prabhupada always liked to speak punishingly of that speculation. And when you were speaking earlier, I was thinking also of Prabhupada's 1936 Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, where he says that, as for me, I have no hope of pure devotional service, but please allow me to take the crores of birth that are allotted to me. I'm paraphrasing too. But never forgetting that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. We were talking about the repeated births, the 10,000, yeah, right.
Some other question? A comment?
How to kind of like protect ourselves, or like do like an honest inventory that to recognize when we are speculating, because like in the nature of it, you're kind of like.
You want to answer?
We all have this power, the power of self-delusion. It's actually, sadhu sangha will keep your, the light at the end of the tunnel, that with good association you see behind yourself. can you see the truth? You see what's real, and you can make a judgment, or, you know, there are some yardsticks there. You can see, okay, well, I should get there. I'm here now, but I should get there.
Yeah,
creating nice, loving relationships where you can really bring it out, you know, bring out your doubts and confusion and delusions, and then you work it all out, you know, with honest communication. Yeah.
So association.
Yeah.
That's the way to avoid. Yeah, devotees act like mirrors to reflect what goes on inside. Sometimes we can't see.
Of course, we have to see those devotees that have a nice reciprocation. We can't be intimate friends with hundreds. We can have a handful of close friends. And many nice, respectful relationships with as many other Vaishnavas as possible. But those precious few friends, then you could really help each other. Honest sharing.
And if it's senior devotees, they must, many of them have probably passed through the same path, you know? Whatever doubts you have, I might have had that 10 years ago. So I understand your situation because I was there. When I first joined, I had the same doubts and the same difficulties, whatever, you know, more or less. We're all coming from the same Malecha background for most of us, ain't it? So, same struggles are there.
You see how dependent we are on the association of devotees. There's a verse spoken by Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj. This is every person should I can't remember, but I'll find it very quickly. I know it. It's in the fourth canto. And I can't believe it. I opened up exactly the verse.
Instant Kindle.
I opened up the fourth canto, and it's right there on the page. Every man should act like this. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. When he meets someone less qualified than himself, he should be compassionate toward him. And when he meets someone equal to himself, he should make friendship with him. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world. The Prabhupada says in the purport, generally, when we find someone more qualified than ourselves, we become envious of him. We find someone less qualified, we deride him. We find someone equal, we become very proud of our activities. These are the causes of all material tribulations. The great sage Narada therefore advised that a devotee should act perfectly. Instead of being envious of a more qualified man, one should be jolly to receive him. Instead of being oppressive to a less qualified man, one should be compassionate toward him, just to raise him to the proper standard. And when one meets an equal, instead of being proud of one's own activities before him, one should treat him as a friend. One should also have compassion for the people in general who are suffering due to forgetfulness of Krishna. These important functions will make one happy with the material world. Oh, that's 4th canto, 8th chapter, 34th verse.
How to tell the difference.
Between who's equal and who's not good.
Common sense.
Well,
sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not so obvious.
Well, if we're humble, it becomes obvious, because then we see everybody's more advanced than ourselves. And you can't lose. And even with equals, even in the presence of equals, if we actually treat an equal as superior, you won't lose. You won't lose. Because the nature, as Prabhupada says, in the presence of equals, we try to become proud in their presence. We try to think, he's a competitor, he's an equal. So because we're equals, that means I have to make sure that he knows what I do, what I've accomplished, and everything. And we fail to appreciate them for what they're doing. So therefore, a humble devotee will say, "Oh, let me take advantage of my friend, and you know, and be eager to hear from him. Let me hear whatever realizations he can share with me. Why did I take the position of being, you know, a fool in his presence? And see how, you know, he'll be very kind to me. And of course, because he's a friend, he won't abuse that because he's a friend. And then you begin to know who your friends are." Because you have friendly relations. And what are friendly relationships? Dhati Pratigrinati Guhyama Jati Prichati. Bhupa Goswami has given the criteria of friendly relationships is that we reveal our mind in confidence, we inquire confidentially, we give prasadam, accept prasadam, we give gifts and accept gifts. But out of love means we don't expect anything in return. And a friend is somebody who thinks, "Oh, he's offered me with this love. He offered this to me with love, therefore I must accept it." And then the friendly relationship is complete, whereas mundane friendship, we generally think, "I'll be his friend as long as if I give him something, he has to give me something back in return." Then that's a friend. But loving relationships of friendship is, "No, I don't expect, I give. And I don't expect anything in return." And because we don't expect it, because he's a real friend, then we see that real friends are very giving, but we don't expect it because we love them. We have affection for them. We have relationships with them. We trust them. It's been tested by time. And therefore, you know, then you really know who your friends are. And as far as who is superior, well, we should always be looking to associate with those devotees. Rupa Goswami has also given Upadeshamrita the criteria that we should mentally respect those persons who are engaged in devotional service, of chanting the holy name of the Lord. They may be kanishthas, but from a distance we respect them. But those who have been taken initiation and are fully engaged in worshipping the deity, and it says fully engaged in some service, then we should offer obeisances to them. And for those who are engaged in fully immersed in devotional service and who are completely devoid of the propensity of finding fault in anyone, we should serve them. We should hear from them, associate with them, and faithfully serve them. So Rupa Goswami is also given the criteria of how to benefit from devotees in that verse, in Upadesha. And we should try to become introspective enough to look within our own hearts to see, you know, where we are in relationship to those who are around us.
Devotees who do only chanting, like they do chanting in their houses. They're not able to do service in the temple, like deity worship and any type of service in the temple. In that case, some devotees, like they are like, you know, hidden in their house, like they are not, like no one can see them what they're doing, but they are doing sincere chanting in their house. In that case, like other devotees in the temple, like they say, like, "Oh, you don't do anything, you do not relate, you do not do any service, you do not do vegetable, you do not do anything in the kitchen or anything." In that case, that devotee who is doing pure chanting in their house.
Pure chanting?
Pure chanting. It's not me, but it's not me. So, it's a story of something. I've seen. I cannot say pure chanting, but the devotee is doing good.
Sincere chanting.
Sincere chanting.
I think that's a better word.
Yes, sincere chanting. In that case, like, he's doing reading, but in the house. Not like no one can see it, just in the house. So in that case, like, he is feeling like demotivated, not recognized, maybe not recognized, but demotivated, not inspired, because other ones are saying, "Oh, you're not doing anything, you're not becoming the temple." Like, he comes to the temple, but not coming that much. he's reading Bhagavatam, he's reading Bhagavad Gita, and listening to lectures. In that case, what that devotee should do in order to keep faith?
Keep faith.
Keep faith in Krishna. Not only is he doing sincere chanting, but sometimes some faith goes like, oh, I'm doing, but still everybody is, nobody recognizing, everybody is cursing me that I'm not doing everything, but I'm doing the main thing, everything is most important. In that case, sometimes this still is happening. So,
what, how to keep motivated? Is that
what is the question?
That's the question.
Yes.
How does such a person who is in that situation keep himself motivated? Not that he shouldn't try to change. How did he keep him motivated? Because that situation is fixed. He's not changing. Is that what you're saying? Okay. I want to answer the question as it's asked.
Despite being criticized, obviously.
Well, it's very difficult without association. And therefore, such a person who isolates himself from association is going to have a very difficult time keeping himself inspired and motivated. And I'm sure many devotees who've been put into forced isolation will testify. Because sometimes by circumstances beyond their desire and control, you may find some devotees in forced isolation. And they'll testify how difficult it is to remain enthusiastic and inspired without association. For those who voluntarily accept isolation, I have to question why they voluntarily accept isolation. Certainly, there is no advantage to faulting such a person who has adopted that position, and for those who are senior and compassionate and care for that person, who potentially have the ability to try to inspire that person to take what they actually need, which is association, then it's always best for that person to genuinely be compassionate and to try to look within his own heart, the person who's trying to be compassionate towards the person who purposely isolated himself. He should look with his own heart to see what can he do or what has he possibly done that is making this person want to remain in isolation, because he's not going to survive. So, therefore, I don't think it's very, you know, Prabhupada even says, you know, right in Chaitanya Charitamrita, anyone who thinks he can advance in Krishna consciousness and live outside the association of devotees, his own words, Prabhupada says, he's living in an hallucination. Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's very difficult. So, it may be possible. It may be possible. Maybe someone may get the enthusiasm, inspiration, everything needed by chanting and by reading. And some actually prefer that. And if they're sufficiently pure in their motivation, and they may actually be able to continue to make progress without devotee association. But we should see that more as the exception than the rule. And we should try to, therefore, if we really see somebody in a situation like that, we should try to look within our own hearts to see what we can possibly do, rather than forcing him further away by faulting him for not being actively engaged in activities, but in trying to get to the root and understand why is he taking that position in the first place, and see if he can somehow bring him out of that state of consciousness. It's possible. Some other question? Would you like to add something?
It's already complete.
So, it's Friday night, we can have a short kirtan before prasadam, is that okay? There's no more questions? Okay.